Welcome to Giants Double Play, the San Francisco Chronicles podcast on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Assistant Sports Editor Janie Hu, and I'm joined today, as always, by Giants beat writer Henry Schulman. In today's episode, Henry and I will dive into the nitty-gritty behind the Giants' trade for Evan Longoria and why the hot stove season has suddenly turned cold. So Henry, it's been a month since we were last here recording, and we named it the Hot Stove Edition. What happened? It's kind of turned cold now. The fire's been put out.
The cold stove edition. I didn't pay my gas bill, so that's the problem we have here.
All right.
Well we have this has been the most unique off season that I can remember in the years I've covered baseball, 3 decades I've covered baseball, and you've had a confluence of events that have kept people. Teams from making trades and filling their teams, usually by New Year's Day. Most teams have done what they call their heavy lifting, and then in January you just try and fill out some bare spots here and there like you would on your Christmas tree after you have most of the bulbs and ornaments up. Well, this year, just about all the major free agents are still out there. The trade market has just fizzled, come to a halt. I mean, the Evan Longoria deal to the Giants from Tampa was one of only a couple three big trades, and you know, the Giants were involved in two of them, sending Matt Moore to Texas as well. The main events, first of all, we had the Stanton and Ohtani watch. I think that was holding up both markets for a while until we saw where Ohtani would land, the Yankees, and where Ohtani would land the Angels and where Stanton would land the Yankees. We all thought that would get things rolling in the markets, and it hasn't. And what really is happening is that this year, more than any other offseason, teams really want to get under the luxury tax threshold, where they would have to pay a luxury tax over $197 million in 2018 payroll. This is something that the big market teams have always been involved with, not the little market teams, but since it's the big market teams, they're the ones who drive the free agent market. And since they want to make sure they get under the deal, they want to wait these free agents out until their prices come down. And so far, apparently they haven't.
Right. We were talking about this before. You know, when a team like the free-spending New York Yankees is cognizant about the luxury tax, that it's serious business here.
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, the luxury tax simply does mean you have to pay more money. I mean, if you sign a $5 million player and you're over the luxury tax barely, then he becomes a $6 million player because it's a 20% tax. And the worse you get, go up, if you're a repeater like the Giants are, they've been 3 times repeat offenders in the luxury tax. Well, now everything they sign, every contract they sign has a 50% penalty. So if they sign a $10 million player, he becomes a $15 million player. But the real key here is that next year we're going to have one of the best free agent classes for hitters we've ever seen, headlined by Bryce Harper of the Nationals and Manny Machado, now with the Orioles. And there's no team that wants to pay, say, $300 to $400 million, maybe $30 million a year for a guy like that, and then have to pay a luxury tax on top of that. So all the repeat offenders want to make sure they're below the tax this year so that they can play next year in the free agent market. And that's holding up a lot of things.
The repeat offender, how many years does that trigger? So these teams are all trying to get under the tax or not go over it this year so that they can be in play next year. They'll still have to pay a luxury tax, but the percentage is not going to be as high. That's correct?
Exactly. So if a team has never been over the luxury tax threshold before, and the threshold changes each year, it goes up because salaries go up. Mm-hmm. If a team has never been under it, they go over the tax this year, it's a very modest penalty. It's 20%. If they go over it any 2 years in a row, then you become a repeat offender. And it really doesn't matter, 2-3 years, you're just a repeat offender. And now it goes up depending on how much over the tax, because that's graduated too. There are some cases where a team like the Dodgers, if they hadn't cut their payroll the way they had, they were so far over the threshold that they could have paid up to about a 90% penalty. So teams want to get out of the tax this year because then it resets for next year. And then if they do sign, if you do sign a Harper and you go over the tax, then the penalty really is much less minimal and you save money.
Right. I remember when we were talking about Giancarlo Stanton and where he was going to go, and everybody knew that his hometown team was the Dodgers, that was one of the things that came up, that they really had a case where they were trying to get under the luxury tax. So they weren't going to be all that enthused about taking on even more salary.
Well, not only were they not enthused, what the Chronicle learned and others had reported as well is that the Dodgers would have been in violation of it's kind of an obscure rule in the collective bargaining agreement. But once a new owner of a team has had the team for 5 years, then you have to meet a ratio of what your debt is compared to what your revenues are. And it's really designed to make sure that teams don't get in over their heads with contracts and are unable to make payroll or pay their bills. And the Dodgers would have violated that rule, and they literally almost couldn't get Stanton. What's interesting is the Dodgers made a very significant trade last week or the week before, and had they made that trade before Stanton had signed, then they might have been able to do the Stanton trade. And the trade I'm talking about is the Dodgers sent three basically dead money contracts in their mind. First baseman Adrian Gonzalez, pitcher Scott Kazmir, and pitcher Brandon McCarthy to the Braves in return for Matt Kemp. The Braves also sent some money along. And basically, it was a revenue-neutral deal, but because all those three Dodger players were on one-year contracts that are expiring, and Kemp still has 2 years left, they can average his contract for the number. And basically, what it means, without getting too technical, is the Dodgers lost a lot of payroll this year for luxury tax purposes in return for spreading more luxury tax over the next year, whereas the Braves, it didn't matter because they were nowhere near the tax. So now the Dodgers feel they can go under the tax this year, which would put them in position to go out and get Bryce Harper next year, which everybody believes they're going to make a strong pitch to do.
Right. You mentioned, without getting too technical, I feel like a lot of baseball offseason coverage now is just the nitty-gritty technical aspects of how these deals are going to work, which money is flowing which way. Let's bring it back home and talk about the Giants making their blockbuster move for Evan Longoria. It's a really complicated deal. Can you help break it down for us?
Yeah, just to bring it down to basics, first of all, the Giants were looking, going into the offseason, offensively to fill three positions: third base, center field, and right field, where at the same time they needed middle order bat, some power from maybe two of those three positions. Well, most likely that would be a corner outfielder and a third baseman. There really aren't that many center fielders out there who have a lot of pop. They're not generally middle order hitters. So the Giants actually filled two needs by getting Evan Longoria. They filled the need for a third baseman. They got a Gold Glover. And they also filled the need for a middle order bat, what you used to be called an RBI guy before you could get thrown into the river for using the term RBI, but a run producer. And the deal was actually really interesting because, coming on the heels of the deal in which Matt Moore was sent to Texas, that was basically a salary dumping move. And the Giants, in trading for Longoria, also sent Denard Span to Tampa. Now, Tampa does not need Denard Span. Tampa does not want Denard Span. But again, the Giants needed to move some payroll so they could try to get under the luxury tax for the first time in 4 years. So the deal for Longoria is revenue neutral for this year. The Giants were able to fill basically two needs, a middle order bat and a third baseman, with one guy without raising their payroll number toward the tax. Now, ultimately, the Giants are taking on $60 million over 5 years for a guy who's going to be 32 this year. So who knows what this contract is going to look like in 2021, rather. The Giants really don't care at this point. The Giants had 98 losses last year. The Giants want to get better this year. They want to compete and contend this year. And right now, they're not looking at what 20, 2020, 2021. They just feel that Evan Longoria makes them better now, and he does.
Right. You just mentioned it. He's 32 years old. It would probably be realistic to say that his best years are behind him. What would you expect out of him for next season?
Well, he's had he had kind of a down year last year, and I talked to Matt Duffy, who used to be the Giants' third baseman, and it was Longoria's teammate last year. He felt that Longoria struggled early on because of injuries, and if you actually look at the numbers, Longoria had a good middle of the season. I think realistically what you can expect from Longoria now, maybe not 20 home runs, maybe 18, which is a lot more than they got out of third base last year. You know, 17, 18 home runs. Maybe a .275 average, and if they get anything over that, it's a bonus. And a guy who can catch the ball, and this has been an important year, offseason for the Giants in terms of improving their defense. And with Longoria, you could argue that the Giants and the Angels now may have the best defensive infields in baseball. Now they have to shore up the defense in the outfield, and that's why they're looking for a rabbit to play center field. But right now, I mean, with Brandon Crawford and Evan Longoria on that side of the infield, and Longoria, even at 32, still a very good defensive third baseman, it's going to be very hard for balls to get through that hole if it gets close to any one of those two guys.
Let's talk about the flip side of that equation, the outfield. We were chatting earlier, and you said you had a spidey sense that a few more deals might trickle through here before the end of the year or into early next year. The Giants outfield is a pretty big question mark right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the big question mark because basically they have two out of three spots unfilled. And the third spot that is filled is Hunter Pence, who they already said is going to have to become more of a role player in 2018. So they need to get a bona fide center fielder and right fielder. We know that they have talked to Jay Bruce, although Bruce, who would be the right fielder, is not a great defensive right fielder, but he does have a little sock. Even from the left side, he's hit well at AT&T Park. I don't know that he was a front burner guy, but they have talked about him. In center, they've been talking for weeks to the Reds about Billy Hamilton. But as my friend John Morosi reported last week, the Reds have asked for the Giants' best prospect, Elliot Ramos, who's an 18-year-old, who is a switch hitter and can hit and can pound the ball. And ultimately could be a great major league player. And if I were the Reds, I would ask for Ramos. If I were any team, I would ask for Ramos. So it's a blinking game. Same with Andrew McCutchen, whom the Giants are interested in. Now, there are a couple of free agent options that would be shorter term, not as much money, with the assumption that their prospect Steven Duggar, maybe before this year is over, can come up and show that he belongs in center. Guys like Gerard Dyson, who is older but is still a good center fielder, and maybe a guy like Austin Jackson, again older but can still play center. But you're not talking about huge free agent deals. So really the Giants have, as Sabian likes to say, are juggling all those balls. And really, I think like all teams right now that are trying to improve, they're waiting for prices to come down, which they expect they will as we get closer to spring training.
Ramos was a guy that the Giants don't want to include in a deal. One guy that they were willing to give up was Christian Arroyo. He was touted for a while as the Giants' top prospect. What did you see from him in his time with the big league team last year, and what do you project out into his future?
Well, I still thought he was a good prospect. He came up and he clearly showed he can hit the fastball. He's not blown away by the fastball. For a guy his size, he had incredible pop. We saw that with some of the home runs he hit. And the biggest issue with him was the plate awareness, pitch awareness. I mean, once pitchers started to figure out that you could throw breaking pitch away, he couldn't hit it and he couldn't lay off it, as Gina Davis said in that movie. He was just owned by Major League Pitching. So really they had just sent him down to the minors to take a deep breath, to sort of get back to the basics of hitting, and then it never happened for him because he got hit by one pitch, then got hit by another pitch, and it broke his hand. I still think he's a valuable prospect. I think he's been passed in the Giants system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really the Rays, we're not going to give up their franchise player, one of their cornerstones since the organization was founded, a popular player like that who can still hit the ball out of the ballpark, play gold glove defense. They weren't going to give a player like that away for just a middling prospect. So you have to give up something to get something, but clearly the Giants felt that with Longoria at least still able to hit well for the next couple of years, they could afford to lose Arroyo.
Right. So we're recording this on December 28th, and the big news of the day in the baseball and larger world, in a sense, was that we had a freelance photographer who worked at Minnesota Twins games accusing Miguel Sano of sexual assault. And I think the Chronicle broke a story late last night about Charlie Hallowell, a very respected East Bay restaurateur, 17 women accusing him of sexual harassment. So obviously this Me Too movement has been growing in fervor across the country, and now Major League Baseball finds itself in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I would expect that Major League Baseball, as they saw the Me Too movement progress, had to know that something like this was going to come out, because pretty much every institution that is male-dominated with people of wealth and power, there have been these stories that have come out, credible stories. And I mean, this photographer had very specific information about what happened to her at the mall with Miguel Sano, and she told those things contemporaneously to friends and relatives, which is an important aspect to any kind of accusation like this. So I think baseball had to have been girding for this, and they instantly said they're going to investigate it. Sano has denied the allegation in the statement his people released unequivocally. You know, baseball, like any sport or any institution, has to take it seriously. They're a little ahead of the game. Maybe all sports are a little ahead of the game compared to some private industries like restaurants, for instance, because they have had to come to grips with the issue of domestic violence in sports. And it started with the NFL, which had a few high-profile incidents, and then baseball realized that it did not have a policy, effective policy. And now there have been players who have been suspended for domestic violence, whether or not they were convicted of any kind of crime, even if there has been no crime, no charges filed. There have been some cases. Jose Reyes is one who allegedly pushed his wife into a window in Hawaii. She wouldn't press charges, baseball did its own investigation and decided to suspend him for half a year anyway. And I think that they understand that they need to be in the forefront as a huge industry that's very popular, that is completely male-dominated on this. And if they feel that there are credible accounts of sexual assault or sexual harassment, they're going to have to move fast. And I have no doubt that Miguel Sano will be suspended if these accusations by the Twins' former photographer are deemed to be true.
Are you checking your calendar yet? 6 weeks away from spring training?
Just about 6.5 weeks until we head out. And the Fan Fest is going to be the Saturday before spring training. So I believe that's the 10th of February. So that's that. All of that is coming up real quickly, and that makes it really all the more interesting that the Giants don't have a team yet.
Fairly incomplete. I'm sure we'll sit down with you in the coming weeks as they start to fill these holes heading into spring training. It'll make spring training a lot more interesting to cover.
Yeah, and I do believe that. I mean, the fans are very anxious. Why don't the Giants do something? Why are they just sitting on their hands? Well, everybody's sitting on their hands. I'm sure they're going to go to spring training with a right fielder and a center fielder they don't have now, and maybe even another bullpen arm, and maybe a back-end veteran starter.
You can't, when you're coming off a 98-loss season, there's nowhere to go but up, we hope.
Well, you could just tear the whole thing down like the Cubs and Astros did and go down for a couple more years, but the Giants like their season ticket money too much, and they ain't going to do that.
All right, thanks for joining us this week, Henry, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Our theme music is Horns of Jericho by Lucas Pern and Miloslav Kolar, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. This show is produced by me and Fernando Diaz. For more Giants coverage, you can follow me on Twitter at Janie_Hu, JANNY_HU, and Henry Schulman at Hank Schulman, HANKSCHULMAN. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com.